All right. So it is 9:57. We're going to get started a little bit early. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Benjamin Dean. I'm a fellow up at Columbia University. I do research on the economics of information. And last night I was over here doing a panel with you guys on blockchains and smart cities, techno-utopian dreams or nightmares.
Okay. So are they dreams or nightmares?
That's the question that's up in the air at the moment. It's one of these situations where in the past we've found whenever there's all this hype around new technology, everyone rushes out to use it and to try and create these magical societies where everything's perfect. And so often it ends up in complete disaster. Mm-hmm. You never learn from the lessons of the past.
So what's a lesson in the past that you could apply to the current
technologies that we're trying to build?
I guess with something similar would be like Bitcoin's spiked and then crashed, and now they're on their way back up again. I guess that's not much different from any other boom and bust. Though I forget the name of what you call it's like a line graph where it goes up and it has like a little boom and then a big crash, and then it kind of exponentially goes up. You kind of saw it with computers and the internet where, like, you know, the first dot-com boom, and then there was like a huge crash afterwards, and then you had the second dot-com boom, and now, like, pretty much the internet is indispensable from like any entertainment, let alone like life in general. So how do you tell the difference between like something that's, well, I guess you don't know until you see it in hindsight, but like something improving our lives and then, you know, kind of dropping a little bit and then being indispensable, and something that just kind of goes the way of the buffalo?
It's one of these things where it's like an adoption. What you're describing is like an adoption curve.
That's it, yeah.
You have the early adopters and the small numbers of them. They pile a whole lot of money into investment up front. And then all this hype builds up around how it's going to be fantastic. We're all going to get rich. It's going to be wonderful. And then one day someone wakes up and realizes, oh, wait a minute, there's no way to make any money from this. We haven't thought about any of the problems and unintended consequences of what we've done. And then it just collapses in a pile. Anytime you see, if you go out and you start chatting to people about this stuff, people who are supposedly experts in this case, is blockchains or in smart cities, and you start asking them, well, what is this? How does it work? What might the problems be? Very quickly, you can work out if it's all hype and mania because they don't know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And as I run around the city here, there's a lot of money right now piling into blockchains. A lot of the banks are putting money into it.
Yeah.
And they're hiring big dev teams to come in and build them these blockchains. I haven't found a single person in the city that knows what a blockchain is and how it works. At least in terms of the people that are putting the money into it.
Yeah.
And so I would say that's your first signal that something's very wrong, that people don't know what they're talking about.
So for like in that example for blockchain, so what should the lessons be learning? So like, is it the issue just that there's lots of money with no thought, or is it some other issue that we need to be, like, how would we alleviate in this specific instance? Like, what do you think would be required to not have that boom bust cycle that we're talking about?
So what we were doing last night was kind of looking back at the past and thinking about other instances that were kind of analogous to situations, like, for this case, is the blockchain. You go back to the early days of the internet, you know, there was similar hype. You remember John Perry Barlow and the Declaration of Independence of Cyberspace. It was like, this distributed network is completely out of control of governments, it's self-regulating, it's going to be great, we're all going to be free. And I don't know if either of you were up there with Matt Blaser's panel last night on the crypto wars. We're in the second one now. Very quickly, we found out that the internet might be distributed, but it can be controlled.
Yeah.
And while governments, at least at the beginning, Barlow was right, they didn't really have any place in cyberspace, until they decided they wanted to get in on the game. Mm-hmm. Very quickly, they clamped down on it, and you know, we saw how that ended up. Instead of setting everyone free, after Snowden released all the documents a couple of years ago, we realized actually it's a surveillance and control machine just as much.
Yeah.
So you take those lessons to blockchains and cryptocurrencies now, sure, they're distributed. Everybody can get onto a everyone can just go and set up an account right now on the Bitcoin blockchain and start mining. But most of the mining happens in China. So far from being a distributed network, it's actually tended towards concentration, just the way that the internet did 2 decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was kind of the approach. Look back at history and see what we can see in terms of mistakes and how we can learn from it. The smart cities are very similar in that respect.
Just like smart cities in terms of like everything being kind of like connected and data acquisition and figuring out where to best like allocate resources, like that type of smart city, like.
So we actually had a big discussion about what the hell is a smart city.
Yeah.
Because nobody can actually answer what that is, which again, going back to my original point, when people are running around saying terms they don't understand, it's trouble. If we assume that it's putting sensors on everything, hooking it up to the internet and tracking it and planning it, that sounds an awful lot like what happened in like the 1930s with planned cities.
Yeah.
It reminds me a lot, and I don't know how familiar you guys are with Walt Disney's, at the end of his life, what he was planning to do. But once he'd been done with the Disney company, he thought he has to solve, the biggest problem facing humanity was social problems in cities. And so he wanted to fix those problems by building what he was going to call Progress City. And what he actually ended up calling it was Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow, Epcot.
Ah.
So Epcot was his kind of utopian vision of what a city would be. It was going to be run by the Disney Corporation. No one was going to own any land. They were not going to get any votes. The kind of omnipotent rulers of the Disney company, I guess Mickey Mouse would be the CEO or something.
Yeah, we know better than you.
Yeah, they would decide how the city would be planned. It would be run by a corporation, and the corporation would fix all these complex social problems. And that sounds an awful lot like what's happening now with all of the investments that Google, for instance, is making in smart cities. Put sensors on everything, hook it up to the internet, and let the corporations solve all the complex problems that we haven't been able to solve up until now because we didn't have enough data to fix it, apparently. That's at least the misconception.
With smart cities, so like let's say like to take New York City and like we'll just put like smart city on a pedestal and just say like make it all whatever the ideal form of a smart city is, you'd have to retrofit almost every system that's in place, some of which are hundreds of years old. Could you see, I know like the third world countries, cellular technologies have like adopted very, very quickly because they had no infrastructure. So if you go somewhere where there's poor cities or no cities and no infrastructure, theoretically, could you, like, if you're building from scratch without having to integrate systems, maybe you'd be better off trying to, like, I don't know, basically build an ideal city in South Africa somewhere, perhaps, than try to retrofit New York City or Beijing or London to do the same?
It's an interesting idea for two reasons. One of them is that a couple of the examples we were talking about last night was how all of these utopian planners would go to places like Brazil and kind of put their plans into action because it was much easier to do it there.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody could resist.
Uh-huh.
It was like you just co-opt the government there, you'll test it on other people in another country, and if it works, great. If it doesn't, who cares?
Sure.
You know, it's not here. The other side, one of my co-panelists last night, James Cropshaw, afterwards we were out having some drinks, and he made an excellent point. And it was that already in complex cities, you already have a complex system. He was talking about like the flower market downtown. It's this decentralized system that works through the market that's extremely complicated and is self-regulating and works very well, given that there's no central point of control. What benefit would you get from hooking all that up to sensors, no matter what the cost, and then planning it, when already it's pretty good?
How would you make that better?
Yeah, it's and that's kind of the question that you hear anybody running around saying we'll hook everything up to sensors and collect more data and it'll be wonderful, the logical question is, well, how is that better than what is there already? And how are you going to do a better job of what are already organic systems that have evolved over centuries to kind of solve these difficult problems in areas where there's no centralized authority?
Okay. How did you fall into this line of research?
It's just one of these things where I noticed a lot of people were... they kind of sobered up after the internet utopian phase. It was about 2 or 3 years ago, and I think it was very much when Snowden dumped all the documents and people realized, my God, you know, all of this information technology that we've put in place, all of the information is being controlled or at least being intercepted. And so I've noticed there's been this kind of moment of reflection amongst a lot of people. And as I kept, you know, listening to that, I kept going back through at least the history books, and I kept seeing these recurring instances of where, you know, this has already happened. We already knew this. It's just everyone forgot it. And so I guess the reason that we put this panel together last night was, one would have thought 2 years after Snowden put all the documents, he didn't dump all the documents, he handed them off to Glenn Greenwald. But one would have thought after we all had this moment of reflection around the internet and, you know, the positive and negative sides of it, the last thing we'd be rushing to do is hook the cities up to sensors in the internet.
Yeah.
And especially allowing corporations and governments to do it. And yet that's precisely what's happening. So it's kind of like we're at this moment in history where we'll either get it right and it could actually benefit a lot of people, or we'll get it horribly wrong like we tend to do because we don't remember, you know, what happened 2 decades ago, much less a century ago.
It does seem like the general population doesn't really care about anonymity. Like, I mean, Facebook, you're self-reporting like all of where you're going. Your smartphone, you're carrying around something that tracks every whereabout.
Yep.
The easy pass on your car.
License plate readers.
Yeah, license plate readers.
Those are actually really scary, honestly.
And it's not even necessarily like just the police that are using license plate readers. I know in my town there's cars that drive through with license plate readers looking for cars to repo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they have like a national database of repo this car if you find it and you get this reward.
Yeah.
So it's not even the government doing this. It's anyone. Anyone with a couple, no, more than a couple bucks, but anyone with the wherewithal can run around scanning license plates and taking like pictures of everything and just doing whatever they want with it.
Yeah.
And
but it seems that people don't care. They don't mind at all.
And as you said, like, people will give stuff up. Like, I can't remember the name of the artist, but very recently there was a musician artist, I believe it was on Instagram, who like went out and said, hey, if you give your like username and password for your Instagram, like, I'll be able to like leave a special message for you. And he was dead serious. That's what he did. But it was literally like thousands of teenage girls just gave him, like, just direct message him their username and password. So it's like amazing how just to get a little bit of like any sort of like air quote content, well, people just give up stuff without second thinking, you know, without second guessing.
Yeah, I'd say it's interesting. I'm not sure if they don't care. I think it's that they don't realize that they're doing it. So if you think, I know in this country, I'm from Australia, and for decades,
I was about to say, yeah,
people have resisted the idea of a national ID card.
Yeah.
They hate the idea of governments having an ID card with their picture on it. It's in a national database. This is something very tangible to people. Mm-hmm. They know what a driver's license is. They don't want a national ID card. Yet, we know in practice, they're willing to have a Facebook profile that's got
everything that you could ask for, yeah.
And they're willing to give up information for almost nothing.
Yeah, not even just like your information, like name, address, social security number. It's name, address, all the people you associate with, and what you had for breakfast yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
Or where you are in your photos.
Yeah. For years and years and years. Yeah. So I guess it's maybe not that they care. When people realize what happens, like, you know, when you hack the big, like, it was Office of Personnel Management when they lost like 22 million American servicemen's
info. Yeah,
yeah, like the interviews they do when they get their clearances, so like really sensitive information, everyone had a fit because they realized that this was possible and this is the cost that you incur over time if you give up all this information. Until then, it wasn't really tangible. They didn't really realize it. But they do care when they find out.
Only when you find out, like someone's abusing it. Like,
yeah.
I think people like, but when the phone companies were doing like the metadata stuff, like
yeah.
everyone in tech knew that like it was completely feasible. And you know, you heard stories of the internet about like secret splits in data centers where, you know, people were reading every packet. And like for the most part, everyone in tech believed like, yeah, like it's feasible that someone's looking at everything everyone's doing.
Yeah, it's like a no-brainer. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when it came out that someone's looking at everything that everybody's doing, like there seemed to be a little bit of like, oh, that's not cool. And then no one cared. And I don't necessarily know if it's because like, you know, you could argue that media isn't as free as we think it is. It's like not in terms of free as in speech, but free as in a very small group of people control the media. So if they say, hey, we want to use your data, let's just not focus on that being a huge news bite.
Yeah.
Like, you can't necessarily think that there's a bunch of people smoking cigars in back rooms saying, like, hey, this is a conspiracy, let's do this. But every company acting in their own best interest is, hey, we want all this data and we want to be able to do whatever we want with it. So let's not focus so much on what someone else is doing because we're doing something similar with, you know, all the people that buy our newspapers or whatnot. Yeah. So in this, like, utopian society, smart city, I don't know, like, let's say we have, like, garbage cans that when they fill, they tell someone, like, hey, come empty me. Like, I think that'd be cool.
I would love to see the hacks raccoons would be doing with those type of garbage cans. Yeah, because they are, like, nature's original hackers in terms of, like, trying to get into your stuff.
Yeah.
So that, like, sounds, like, super awesome and useful. Like, what are some things that would be put in place into my utopian city that would quickly make it come, like, dystopian?
So if you take a look around, you guys are all from New York, right?
New Jersey.
I live in central Jersey, yes.
Okay, so if some of you come into town in the last couple of months, you'll have realized that there are these obelisks sprouting up all over town.
Yep.
The Link NYC obelisks.
Mm-hmm.
So tomorrow I'm doing a talk on that.
With the crypto.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So they pulled out earlier this week.
Yeah.
Because I've been looking at this for a couple of years now. I threw up my hand and said, no, I'm happy to talk about it. That is interesting because on the one hand, it could be great, you know, if you have free,
yeah,
it's never free, but right. If people have got access to Wi-Fi and they're not being tracked,
right,
and it's not all just being fed into a database forever that Google will hold. So it could be great if things like that didn't happen, but it looks like it will happen. And if you go and have a look at those obelisks, they've got three cameras on them, one on either side,
right,
and one on the
control panel,
screen.
Yeah.
So, the claim is that these cameras, number one, have not been activated. Why would you put cameras on the obelisks if you're not going to use them?
Yeah.
And then when they are, if they are activated, as I think they almost certainly will, they'll be used to do things like track traffic flows and garbage bins, you know, are they full and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure, you can use cameras to see if the garbage bin's full and see if the traffic is heavy, or you could use it to see who's on what corners when.
Mm-hmm. True.
Depending on who you are.
And I would assume like it wouldn't be a stretch to say this facial this face, which we, you know, recognize through facial recognition, has this cell phone, and we see it move in this direction through the city.
Triangulate
you
where
people
are.
You could start tying people to phones to everyday patterns.
Yeah. And so this is where the decision is, are we going to turn into a dream or a nightmare? Going through the terms and conditions, I think that the Link NYC people realized, like, wow, people are terrified we're going to use facial recognition technology. And so although most of it's very vague, the privacy policy I'm referring to, there's a bullet, like, added to the end in a different font. Clearly, you know, some lawyer's been asked to throw on there at the very last minute saying we won't use facial recognition technology. Oh. I would say things like that are excellent, where you actually, bind them down and you say, all right, there are certain things you cannot do.
Yeah.
And don't give us vague statements like we may do this or we may do that. You say what you're going to do with what.
Right.
And you say, and we tell you what you're not going to do.
Mm-hmm.
That perhaps is the way in which you start getting the upside of the technology.
So the only thing holding us back from a utopian city is the correct type of contract?
It's
lawyers.
No.
Lawyers and litigation will usher us into a new golden age?
No, they're death of them.
No, the last thing we need is more lawyers.
Yeah.
What I would say we need is to ask people what they want and to make these kinds of... If we're going to have corporations installing all this stuff,
right.
We need them to be held accountable simply. Ask people what they want. Do you want facial recognition technology that might help you combat some crime but will result in horrible discrimination and surveillance of certain parts of society? Mm-hmm.
I mean, all you really have to do is say, hey, we could use it to find missing children. And then no one's going to say, no, I don't want to find missing children. So you create that slippery slope of, we could find anyone.
Yeah.
Have you noticed, a smart city sounds like a really like high goal. Do you know of anyone doing smart towns, smaller type things? And if they are, is there anyone doing it well?
So the Google guys, Larry Page at least in the past, has said that he wants to set up experimental zones. And
that doesn't sound shady at all.
No. This is like a recurring feature throughout history. We don't want anybody to watch what we're doing, and we mm-hmm. certainly don't want them to refuse what we're doing, so we're going to set up a new town where we'll do whatever the hell we like. And so Larry Page has said he wants to set these up. He says he doesn't want to change the world, but maybe we can set a part of the world aside where we can do all this testing. And very recently, Google's own Cyborg Labs, which is like their smart city company.
It's called Cyborg Labs.
Cyborg Labs, yeah. And they want to set up a digital district, which is like, you know, it's exactly as it sounds. Self-driving cars, sensors on everything.
Did they absorb Cyberdyne? Like, this is the first time I'm hearing of a division of Google named that, believe it or not.
So, you'll tune in tomorrow for the talk.
Yeah.
Because there is a history about them that is very interesting, because they just kind of sprouted out of nowhere and then bought Link NYC here in town.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And that's where I heard, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, suddenly they're the ones that own the public Wi-Fi that's now not very public.
And that's another scary thing, is like someone will accept something good. Like I remember the big news, I don't know if it was this week or last week, but that Opera was bought out by some Chinese conglomerate for something like a $600 million or something like that. So all of a sudden, like...
Opera, you know, the browser?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, you think you have something and then someone weird over here comes in, buys it up, and it's like, oh crap, you know, it's like Microsoft back in the 90s, except now everyone's doing it.
Yeah.
Oracle inside Microsoft.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Before I go, I don't want to, you know, cause we're Radio Stat, we're to derail, but I just want to mention that right outside now, we actually do have a conference. I don't know if they're going to show up. We actually have someone visiting via remote drone. I'm kind of showing a picture to everyone
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, they set up their own, like, camera system and wheels, and it's solar-powered. Cool. And so this guy's girlfriend is remote checking out the con. He's, like, walking it like a dog, and it's just lovely.
Do they
so.
Want to come on air?
They actually said they will probably stop by in a few minutes, so I'm going to hang out there looking at that. So anyhow, continue. Apologies.
I lost my train of thought by remote dogs.
Just to build on that, though, around the Microsoft thing, you remember very recently that Microsoft just bought LinkedIn.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, run a thought experiment. What happens if the Russian mob bought LinkedIn?
Yeah.
There's really not too much legally to stop that happening. Now, that's an extreme example. It's just a thought experiment. But there is reason to think that a company could come along and buy, like, you know, Yahoo's up for sale. It's looking like it's going to go through.
Buy Yahoo and then just do illegal things with the data?
Yeah. Well, it's one of the assets of the company, and it's...
And true, and if it's a company that's outside the United States, it's not like there's anything you could do really about what they do with the data that they just purchased.
Yep.
That's a really interesting thought, yeah. Why hasn't, like, a large, like, criminal enterprise that's, like, tech-based just by someone and then use the personally identifiable information to like steal identities or yeah. I wonder how long it'll be until we see something like that happen.
Remember early in our discussion, we were talking about like the hype curve and it's like, you know, everyone gets excited and then there's a crash. You know, when they're publicly listed companies, their share price can, you know, crash down to a fraction of what it was previously. That's when you swoop in and buy it cheap.
Sure.
And after years and years of collecting data, I mean, that's really a treasure chest.
The data could be invaluable depending on what you want to do with it.
Yeah, so I guess we see in the future what happens. It's probably too early to say, but it will be interesting to see what happens to all of these wrecked companies when inevitably everyone wakes up and realizes that this time it's not different.
Interesting. I don't have anything else to contribute.
Well, so we have an IRC channel. Is there any questions? So AudiX says see also the sale of ARM. So I guess
ARM processors just got bought by, I think, a Chinese conglomerate.
Yeah, they did. For a lot of money.
A lot of money. For, I think, a company that isn't really in tech either. And then now you control the processor market for almost all the mobile phones.
Yay. Do we have any questions on the IRC channel, for the listeners? Bueller?
Well, you're working on that. You said you were a fellow?
Yeah.
For which college again?
The School of International and Public Affairs at Columbia.
Do they have a fellowship that, focuses on, technology? Well, first off, is your background technology, or is it city or urban planning, something like that?
It's a bit of a mix, my background. I originally studied economics to begin with.
Okay.
And then when I came over here, I spent a few years in Paris doing work in that area around, they call it technology policy.
Okay.
It's kind of an obscure area, but after that I went up to Columbia and I did kind of a whole mix of different subjects, some around programming and data analysis and visualization, some other stuff around public policy, some more economics. So I've got a really kind of mixed background.
So does the fellowship that you're a part of, does that focus on technology or smart cities or
Yeah, I'm the first one. I'm actually just about to finish the fellowship.
Okay.
I just brought on a new guy who's going to replace me. It's broadly technology and policy. There's many, many areas that we'll look at. We tend to look a lot at information security.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, the government's getting very interested in that right now after years of failing.
I think with what happened with the DNC leaks and then the whole private email server thing, I think we're going to see a huge focus on info security in the next at least upcoming election cycle.
Yeah, agree.
A lot of those things made huge changes in what's going on right now in our government.
That's true. Though Johnny is insistent, I think he was saying he has this idea that there's going to be an InfoSec bubble, so it's going to take off and it's going to be really serious. And then as that becomes, ideally, it would become second nature in every when a developer now has the InfoSec knowledge to know that that's a stupid, don't use this specific function because it's a stupid thing, str copy instead of strn copy.
Mm-hmm.
Once the developers kind of figure out, because a lot of it apparently is that we're using the same exploits to get information or exploit a program that have been around for a while and just new developers don't know because nobody really teaches that in college, or you don't really, if you're not thinking about it, you're not going to go and search out the knowledge of how to do things not stupidly.
You're just going to build something that works.
Yeah, you're going to build something as quickly as possible using whatever's going to work. As best for you. There's probably going to be a bit of an InfoSec bubble where you'll have a lot of people that'll be probably not pen testing so much, because I think people still need to have pen testing regardless. But there's going to be a huge push for it, and then it should just kind of become its normal thing and just kind of taper off.
You'll see what's a CISSP certs?
Yeah.
You'll see tons of people start getting them, and then it'll become the CCNA, where it's just it's something people have and not necessarily
it doesn't mean anything anymore.
It doesn't mean anything anymore. I mean, I know the CISSP, like, it's a lot more strict in terms of what you need to do, and in terms, but...
Well, so, like, usually what happens with certification programs is that they're really good until companies start complaining that they're spending a fuck ton of money, and then their people don't get certified because it's too hard.
Yeah.
And then they start bitching. And at the end of the day, certification bodies, they're great, but they also have customers, and they need people to like them to a certain extent.
I think it's kind of interesting that when you look at, like, technology, science fiction, in the past, you had, like, you know, the government kind of controlling everything, and, like, this kind of, like, elite group of hackers kind of fighting back and using all the technology integration to, like, I don't know, fly through virtualized cities to hack cameras to do whatever. I mean, it's not much different than what you see in, like, video games like,
Watch Dogs?
Like Watch Dogs, in a similar way. And I think that, like, the average, like, 50 to 70-year-old person that, like, just watches TV, they think that the biggest thing they need to be scared about are these, like, evil hackers coming to steal their credit information. And they don't even put second thought into, like, the government collecting, like, all this data. Like, no one ever views, like, these hackers view the government as being this big overarching thing. But, like, I feel like the average older person doesn't. Like, they don't see, like, well, why does it matter that, you know, the government knows who's walking on what corner, or that this trash bag is full, or, you know, who I called when and where.
I think a lot of people don't realize, so, like, even if your current government, like, is chill and not, like, huge dickwads, the next government isn't guaranteed. Or you have stuff like the OPM breach where, you know, some guy fucks up, or a lot of people fuck up, and they don't do their jobs properly, and then all of a sudden, like, all of these very important records are gone and copied, like, fingerprint data and shit like that. Like, it's just gone for use by whoever. So maybe your government is okay, like, you're okay with your government having it, but are you okay with other people's governments having it?
Or
random strangers having it?
Yeah.
Or, like, it's like, as soon as that data exists, it doesn't matter that who has it, because there's eventually somebody else will have it, and you might not like them, and they might not like you.
Yeah, and you only have to look at what's happened in Turkey last week. And I went to Turkey maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and Erdogan was starting to kind of get a lot more militant. Watching what's happened in Turkey over the last week after this coup attempt, 60,000 people have been rounded up. And you've got to believe that databases have been kind of constructed over the recent years to work out who they are and get ready to, you know, take them out when the time's right.
I could see that they basically put together, like, these people are communicating with these people, are communicating with these people, let's just round everyone up. Because I know, like, there's some talk, like, in certain circles that the coup may have been, you know, like, a farce or just very poorly planned. But, like, it wasn't just military people, it was also, you know, like, judges and civil servants.
Teachers.
And, yeah, like, everyone. So, yeah. I don't know where to go from that topic. But, so, you said your talk tomorrow. What time and where can people find you?
It's 11 a.m. in, is the main room Lamar?
Yes, I think, the big one.
Uh-huh. In the big one. 11 a.m. And, Link NYC. The title's still Link NYC Spy Stations, because John and Deb are, you know, named it. I think they're going to be webcasting their own, the talk that they would have given on Cryptome. So, I've got some competition, some hard competition. But 11 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Okay, thanks for coming out. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much.